For a year-end tax-deductible gift of $250 or more to Issues Etc., we'll send you our new book, Objections Overruled, Answering Arguments Against Christianity, and a recording of 15 Epiphany Hymns featuring the Lutheran Public Radio Choir. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org, or you could also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
I would say that the return of constant uses of off-the-record sources is the result of a lot of the political bitterness in American life over the last 4 years.
He does love you just the way you are, and he loves you entirely too much to leave you that way.
It's that single word from the cross. It is finished. My forgiveness is as certain as the fact that Christ has died for the world.
Hi, this is Jack in Ponca City, Oklahoma, and I love to listen to Issues Etc. while I play my bagpipe.
Well, he certainly is well known, maybe not a household name. Celebrity adjacent pastor. That's an interesting term that we have now, celebrity pastors. He hung out with Justin Bieber and other megastars. He was well known in the Hollywood set and attracted some celebrities to his church, which is Hillsong Church NYC. That's New York City. Carl Lentz, he is now formerly the lead pastor there at Hillsong Church NYC. Early last month, he was fired by Hillsong's global pastor, Brian Houston, citing leadership issues, breaches of trust, and moral failures. There's a New York Times story about him, in fact, rather detailed. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, December the 9th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about that New York Times story about the sexual misconduct of megachurch pastor Carl Lentz a little bit later. We'll be spending some time with Dr. Ken Sherb in part three of our weekly series, Through the Old Testament. In a church year, we'll talk about the call of Abraham. Then Dr. Andrew Steinman, Distinguished Professor of Theology and Hebrew at Concordia University Chicago, joins us to talk about the dating of Herod the Great and his reign, and it coinciding with the birth of Jesus and the date for the birth of Jesus. Joining us to discuss a New York Times story about the sexual misconduct of a megachurch pastor, Carl Lentz, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Is there more to this Hillsong story than just another sex scandal with a high-profile preacher?
That totally depends on whether or not you're interested in Hillsong Church and in why Hillsong Church exists, and what it says, what it does, or you've got a real irony here. The whole point of this really quite good New York Times, I would say it's very good but incomplete, New York Times feature story, the whole point is the scandal kind of grew out of Hillsong's, as you put it, being adjacent to celebrity athletes, superstars. I mean, you're obligatory Justin Bieber references right up at the top of the story, the whole bit. And did that celebrity lead to this pastor's fall from grace? Did it kind of lead him astray? The great irony of all that is, would the New York Times be interested in this story without the angle of celebrities and without the church's popularity with Kevin Durant and with Justin Bieber and occasional links to Kardashians and stuff like that? Would the Times be interested in this story if there was no celebrity angles to it? You know, which means it's kind of bad that he's hanging out with celebrities, but at the same time, that's how you get covered, which is maybe what led him into that angle part of life in the first place. I mean, during the 5 years that I got to live in New York part-time, I would say at least a third and sometimes half of my students went to Hillsong. And I would talk to them all the time about what made it so exciting and why it spoke to them. And of course, they talked about the music. I mean, you've got your basic Gen X rock approach there. And they talked about the preaching. And then I would say, well, what was it about the preaching? And this is suddenly where they had trouble talking about specifics. And they would say, well, it really spoke to me. And I would say, why, how, and they'd kind of go round and round in circles. So if you're actually interested in why Hillsong has become one of the most famous growing megachurch things in the world, and especially in the capital of the world, which is New York City, then this story is going to leave you kind of wanting to know more. But if you're only interested in Justin Bieber and celebrity and Rolex watches and ripped jeans and tight shirts with an extra button undone while someone preaches in hip glasses with tattoos all over his arms, this is the New York Times story for you. So did I kind of answer half your question and leave half of it unanswered?
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's a half there because there are ironies in the actual story of the sex scandal. When this initially broke early in November, the thing I found ironic was here is probably one of the most famous pastors in the United States. Certainly not the most famous, but one of the most famous pastors in the United States. He gets to go on The View and they love him. Things like that. The woman with whom he had his initial dalliance outside the church didn't know who he was, had no idea who this young man was, didn't know he was famous, didn't know he hung out with, didn't know Justin Bieber lived in his house for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, I am reminded back in the mid to late 80s when I was able to spend most of a week living in a secret, or at least certainly off the map, center on the west side of the Colorado Rockies that specialized in counseling fallen clergy and church leaders. And the leader, Dr. McBurney, the leader, the late now Dr. Lewis McBurney, he said that out of all of the cases he had ever handled, all but two or three had involved sexual infidelity. Yet he also said that out of the hundreds of cases he had worked with, he only felt that sexual infidelity was the actual issue that caused the problem and led to a clergy person's family life and everything else just falling apart, and to the point where he needed professional counseling, you know, from a Mayo Clinic level counselor, which says a lot right there. So once again, did this story get covered because of sex and a scandal and celebrity headlines? Or is there actually a story here about Hillsong and its roots and what it does that actually is important? And I would say Hillsong has been a very important story in New York City now for a number of years. But does that get you in the hallowed pages of the New York Times? Or does it take a little bit of extra sizzle to get you the coverage? Which, once again, is a way of asking the ultimate question about Get Religion. Does it matter whether or not you get the actual religious content of these stories? Or do they only matter if they have celebrity, politics, etc.?
Did the New York Times story deal with the fact that Hillsong is arguably, with the exception of maybe some truly, truly mega churches that we don't talk about much because they're in Asian countries, the most influential church on the globe, the Australia church, and then its many satellites all over major metropolitan areas. Did it talk about the influence of Hillsong?
Well, it hinted at it, but nowhere in the story do you actually talk to any church historians or any research. I mean, there are centers now dedicated to the study of the megachurch phenomena. We don't hear from any of those people. I mean, you could make a case that Hillsong is to the current moment what something like Saddleback was to the megachurch phenomena 25 years ago. I kept waiting for them to draw a connection to Willow Creek and kind of to the fall of the Willow Creek empire, you know, linked to the Me Too moment and Church Too and clergy stepping outside of the bounds, you know, in terms of their sexual behavior and harassment of women. I kept waiting for that to happen, and I wonder why it never did. But once again, we're asking the same question again, aren't we? Is anybody actually interested in the subject of megachurches and the pressure they put on clergy and the pressures that are created to keep them growing and successful? And by the way, what does the word successful mean to a pastor of a megachurch and to that world as opposed to ordinary clergy? I love the fact that this guy was, Lentz was called a pastor and a pastor, yet one of the main themes of the story was it never discussed whether he was doing any pastoral ministry. In fact, part of the warning sirens involved in this piece was that he did not have any contact. That, I mean, ordinary church members couldn't get backstage into the green room, if you can hear the scare quotes I'm putting around things, where the celebrities and guests had their Hollywood-style spread of food, and his wardrobe for that day was up to where he could make a decision about which ripped jeans he wanted to go into that day and which fashionable shirt with short sleeves that shows off his tattoos. You know, what kind of hair gel were we into today? Do I keep my usual glasses or is this a special? You had all of that as more like a Hollywood sort of thing, which I'm making the same point over and over. What is Hillsong? What is the history of Hillsong? Where did it come from? I, in particular, found it interesting that the whole point was that this was this incredibly charismatic pastor, you know, who had taken this church in the heated atmosphere, the edgy atmosphere of New York, and it had grown. And clearly, it was his voice and his vision and what he had to say that helped create a lot of this phenomena, along with the Hillsong music from Australia and their own musicians, et cetera, et cetera. You know what's missing from this story? There isn't a single paragraph in this story of any content from one of his sermons. And there isn't a single chunk of the story dedicated to why people thought he was a great preacher. What was he saying that connected with people? And in this case, it would have been really easy to write that part of the story because all of the sermons are online and many of them are on YouTube. I kept waiting for quotations from the final two sermons that he preached before he fell, both of which are still online and have the kind of loaded title, "I'm Not Slowing Down," is the name of this two-part sermon series. Wouldn't you have thought that that would be fairly relevant in a story about this superstar, charismatic, with a small or a large C, pastor whose career was built on his celebrity, but also initially his charisma? What made Justin Bieber want to come hear this guy preach? What makes these people, what are they getting from his sermons? Or even what's he saying? I would say that that's one of the most important things that could have been in this story. Yet I know from personal experience how hard that can be to sell to editors. Let me just give you a lengthy flashback in my own history. Back in the early 80s, I was at the Charlotte Observer. And of course, that immediately you think of Jim and Tammy Baker and all that. Well, there was another big story in town, or at least I argued it was a big story, in that we had a church called Calvary Church, which, and that's not Calvary from the West Coast, it was a church that came out of mainstream Presbyterianism. And as the Presbyterians began fighting about sexuality and biblical authority and all this, a church came out, and this became one of the cornerstones of what became known as the Presbyterian Church in America, the conservative alternative Presbyterian denomination, along with the Evangelical Presbyterian Church and some others. Anyway, Calvary Church just exploded. I mean, and my editors got interested because we were beginning to have fights over things like zoning laws, you know, like how big could they get in the neighborhood where they were, and what about the traffic jams? And then, of course, they were also interested in that the minister was making conservative statements on issues related to politics and sexuality. And this is the early 80s, which means we're kind of back there at the birth of the religious right and all of that. Well, I did this huge profile of this church, and I got deep down into the weeds about how fast it had grown and what all of the small groups they were doing and all of these ways they were connecting with people's lives. But once again, the whole key here was the pulpit. And I ended the piece. I made a case that while the mainline Protestant churches were shrinking already and beginning to fade and kind of crack, this church came out of the mainline world, yet with kind of a sense of mainline style and dignity. It was still preaching kind of the old religion. It was one of the only places you could go where there were clergy with graduate degrees from various places and classical music and a big thundering organ and all this other stuff. And the minister was still preaching about heaven and hell and salvation. And he was doing it in a style completely different than fundamentalist churches in the city. There was still a hint of the mainline, kind of like James Kennedy down in Florida. And I ended the piece with a lengthy section of one of his sermons where he talked about heaven and a vision of heaven and the second coming. And he said, you know, that we're going to reach a time where our world is just going to snap shut like a curtain going back up, and the light of heaven is going to come through the window at long last. And it was this really gripping visual language. And that's how I ended the piece and said, you know, that after that, another 10, 15, 20 people walked the aisle to join this church. In effect, what I was arguing was that what this church was saying had something to do with its success. And the editors were interested in the fact that not everybody that was going to this church was, you know, knuckle-dragging evangelicals. There were major players in Charlotte who were beginning to attend this church and were interested in this church. And I argued that it had something to do with the message. Well, the minute that story got to the copy desk, one of the editors came over and said, Mattingly, the Metro editor, who, by the way, was a Pulitzer winner, the Metro editor just does not want this story to end the way you ended it. He doesn't think this has anything at all to do with this church and with the success of this church. And I said, why? Why does he think that? Well, the saying we used to have in the newsroom in a southern city with a city street down the middle named Billy Graham Boulevard, I mean, I said something like this guy was raised Unitarian and then backslid, meaning this editor, and that maybe he just didn't get what Charlotte, North Carolina, sounds like when it comes to religion. And I went to the mat, to the degree that I think that fight ended up being kind of a factor later that year in my departure from the Charlotte Observer and me heading to the Rocky Mountain News in Denver. So once again, here's the point. I absolutely argued that what that church was saying and doing had something to do with its success. Now, does that strike you as a funny equation to have to argue?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. and author of the Weekly on Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. When we come back, the New York Times uses the word seeker sensitive to Terry's question about the content of the preaching. We'll return with that as the framework. Thanks for more than 5 million downloads of Issues Etc. again this year. Please help us reach more listeners in 2021 by making a year-end tax-deductible gift. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org or by giving us a call, 618-223-8385. With 3 weeks left in 2020, we're $135,000 short of expenses. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc.
It's almost that special time to unpack your Advent and Christmas ornaments. But there's a problem. Your ornaments are from the 80s. They're made of styrofoam, the glitter has dropped off, and they are being held together with toothpicks. Don't celebrate another Christmas hearkening back to the age of glitter balls. Ad Crucem's ornaments are beautifully designed and lovingly made. Right here in Colorado, we offer all the old designs and a whole lot of new ones. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Do you want your neighbors and community to see what you're celebrating this Christmas season? Why not display an outdoor nativity in front of your home or church? It's a great way to show others what Christmas is all about, the birth of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Check out the Outdoor Nativity Store at OutdoorNativityStore.com. Durable, affordable, and American-made nativities. OutdoorNativityStore.com. OutdoorNativityStore.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about a New York Times story about the sexual misconduct of a megachurch pastor, Carl Lenz, formerly of Hillsong Church, NYC. Our guest is Terry Mattingly of Get Religion. If you appreciate our weekly interviews with Terry, please make a year-end tax-deductible donation to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Any gift is deeply appreciated. With 3 weeks left in 2020, we're $135,000 short of expenses. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping Issues Etc. in mind when you consider your year-end giving. So, Terry, I noticed that they went in-depth enough to at least, they must have read something there at the New York Times, to classify, and I think correctly so, Hillsong as seeker-sensitive, a term that is a little, almost archaic by now, but it's about 25 years old, but at least they got the category correct.
Young man, it's about 30 years old. I mean, Saddleback's been around a long time, which, by the way, I would mention that I would think right now Saddleback is not in the news as much because it no longer is considered politically powerful and celebrity or centered or whatever. I would argue that as we end near the end of the Rick Warren era, Saddleback, I think, deserves a huge page one story somewhere. What happens now? What happens to its legacy? But back to your point, they did a little bit of seeking, so to speak, into the history of this church, and they even briefly mentioned that the founder of the Hillsong Empire, you know, you have the connection to Australia, and it talked a little bit about Brian Houston, because he, after all, is who fired Lenz from his position in New York. And I kept thinking, are they going to actually address the history of Hillsong? And the answer is no. Now, so my question to you is, how many people who know a lot about Hillsong, can sing the famous songs and all this other stuff, how many of them realized that until like 2 years ago, Hillsong was an Assemblies of God church. You think many know that?
No, I don't think so.
Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Okay, good for you. I think that's incredibly important. And once again, it returns us back to this culture of independent megachurches and this kind of semi-charismatic, semi-old-fashioned. I mean, there have been scandals in the eyes of the press about the fact that Hillsong still is holding on to traditional Christian teachings on sexuality and issues like that. And at Hillsong and at Hillsong-type churches, that gets us into interesting stories when someone like a Hollywood superstar like Chris Pratt is all of a sudden being called out for his lack of support for LGBTQ rights, and then people start quoting his minister, or they start quoting the actual beliefs of a Hillsong church and stuff like that. And the next thing you know, once again, celebrity, sexuality, politics, does he even support Trump? All of this stuff drags the story out to the front page. Whereas nobody wants to talk about the story, what's Chris Pratt doing at that church? What is it about the message of that church that would take someone who's been through his own share of trials and tribulations, what puts him in that kind of a church? We're back to whether the religion angle actually matters. I also thought it was fascinating that if you put this thing on a timeline, there was a scandal linked to Hillsong in Australia, linked to Brian Houston's father and his father's fall from ministry when he was accused of sexual harassment and acting out sexually with young males. And Brian Houston pulled his dad out of ministry, and this ended up hitting headlines in like 2015 in Australia. And then you had connections to the current prime minister of Australia, and all this is going to be a big deal. Well, right after that, Hillsong leaves the Assemblies of God, cuts its ties, and goes independent, which to me returns us to this difficulty that journalists have in understanding the potential weaknesses in totally independent religious movements and totally independent megachurches. Like Willow Creek got some attention related to this. A lot of the Southern Baptist Convention stories related to Me Too and sexual abuse have pivoted on the fact that Southern Baptist churches are completely independent at the level of getting to vote and decide what they want to do, that the denomination doesn't have the ability to kind of pull them into line, that clout doesn't exist. Well, I would argue that this latest scandal with Lentz in New York, is that kind of in the DNA of Hillsong? I mean, that this secrecy and alpha male pastor syndrome, is that kind of what happens when you leave a denomination and cut your ties to what little authority there was controlling you? All of that is fascinating to me, but, then again, I'm a religion writer. The question is, are questions of substance like that of interest to the people who can put a story with huge play and huge art in the pages of the New York Times, let alone into network television and some of the other places this story has gone? Is religion actually important, even when we're talking about religion stories, actual stories about religious institutions and religious people who attend these churches and the preachers whose messages attract them and the songs they sing? Does it matter what these churches actually say and do? Or is it only news if it's quite literally sexy?
Well, Terry, with about a minute or so here, do you think the New York Times will follow up? Because the latest story about Lentz is that he has sold his home. He and his wife have moved to the West Coast, have prepaid about $100,000 in rent you know, very palatial place to live there. And with some connection to Tyler Perry, who is as big a star as Justin Bieber and probably one of the most influential men in Hollywood. Because only for the celebrity angle can they say, all right, we can leave the religion angle behind and now talk about this celebrity adjacent former pastor who Tyler Perry considers a good enough friend to front him 6 months rent.
If it's going to get covered, sadly, that's probably what will happen. But before we get to that question, let's ask another one. Is anyone going to follow up with what happens to Hillsong? Both Hillsong here in New York City, as we all know, the most important city in the world, and Hillsong, the international movement. Will Hillsong learn anything from this? Will there be any evidence of a change in Hillsong culture? What's the second act? Or even if the earlier scandal, which only got a paragraph, is Act 1, and the Lent scandal is Act 2, is anybody going to cover Act 3, even in this church in New York City? Or will it vanish until we have another set of celebrities to attach to it? And once again, journalists will ironically say that part of the problem is how celebrity-driven this story is, even though that's why they're covering it.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you for your time.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, Dr. Ken Cherb joins us. We'll be in part three of our weekly series with him, Through the Old Testament in a Church Year. We'll talk about the call of Abraham. Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
In the Old Testament, in the Exodus, the tabernacle was the sign of God's presence among his people. That presence is now in the flesh of Jesus Christ. And so John writes in his gospel, "And the Word became flesh and tabernacled among us." To learn more about this and how Christ fulfills the Old Testament in his incarnation and birth, pick up your copy of the Lutheran Witness today, cph.org/witness to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. simplyclassical.com.